What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Comedy Album Book Club. This month we are doing Richard Pryor's album Live on the Sunset Strip. I am here today with the regular host Jason, who's joining us unexpectedly, because he originally wasn't going to be able to join on this call, but
here I am.
Have him. Excellent.
Me too. Interesting to see you in the big chair.
Yes.
I'm sure you'll be fine. Don't worry.
Fun to be driving. Also today, we have Elsa Bruno and Isaac Wrinkle Sunleaf from the podcast, or from the sketch troupe Serendipity. You're both recently in Toronto doing at Toronto Sketch Fest for your Serendipity show. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, and we killed them. Excellent. Sorry for anybody who had to show up in Toronto after us, since everyone was dead.
So you guys had some, flight problems, though, that coming in. Air Canada was miserable to you guys, weren't they?
Yeah. You know, I learned afterwards that they weren't being miserable. They were trying to keep me alive, which I retrospectively appreciate. At the time, I don't know. Can I say fuck on the?
You can cuss all you want.
At the time, I was a full fuck Air Canada. But then, after like being on the phone, someone was like, "Oh yeah, no, Trump." Can I say Trump on this?
No, you can't.
Okay. Not so sure.
45. He doesn't want all the planes to follow this guy anymore, so he kept a few on the ground. And once I learned that, I was like, you know what? I can live with it. I can live with not falling out of the sky at a billion miles an hour. So
was this your was this your guys' first Toronto Sketch Fest?
Yeah. It was mine, at least. At the very least, it was my first time in Toronto, period. I'd been to other parts of Canada a couple times, just hopped over the border. But hadn't been to Toronto yet. And it was so cool. I really like Toronto. I really want to go back.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Excellent.
Well, anytime. Our new license plate says, what is it now? Is it going to be yours to
discover?
Wonder.
I was
Discover, and then they were going to change it to open for business, which is going to be the commercial license plates. But it's going to be a place to grow. Oh, that's going
to
be
place to grow.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Based on an old Expo 67 song. We're going back in time, apparently.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's another podcast.
California's new plates say, leave now. Yeah. And then the ones in New York have a picture of Lakeith Stanfield's face and it says, get out on each eye.
San Francisco has a sea lion, right?
Yeah, right. To his head on a sea lion body.
That image.
So what's the sketch show that you guys do together? Or is it, what's it like? What kind of sketches do you do?
That's a really good question. Isaac, you want to try and answer that?
Yeah, I'll try. I would say we do a range of things that are just bizarre, just strange sketches, to ones that we feel are things that are near and dear to us, whether issues or just emotions. And we just approach it all with the same, I would say, genuine love for each other and for the sketches to make it really fun. Yeah, I'll say that's my alley-oop time. Alley-oop.
That's, you know what? That was really well said.
It sounds kind of like a sketch comedy troupe.
Yeah, you know what? It's a lot like a sketch comedy troupe.
Wow. I never thought of that.
Yeah. The only thing, I mean, actually, what was unique about this Sketchfest performance is that Toronto Sketchfest is like really adamant that like nothing is improvised, like nothing is made up. You just write it down and do what you wrote. And one of the reasons we're serendipity is that similar, just like what Isaac said, right? We like use sort of emotions as the focal point, and then kind of write around what we feel, you know. And so, if we stumble at like if the day of the show, I'm sad, then we just sort of allow that to like take over the sketch, right? Like we let that. The funny is still there, the joy of it all is still there, but there's like an honesty to whatever we stumble upon, whatever we serendipitously find in the day. If the audience gives us something that's kind of funny, if we see somebody outside or whatever. So this time we had to like be a little more strict with our with our format, which was because we are a sketch troupe, as you so eloquently pointed out. It was good to just do the sketches as opposed to try and always improvise, but it's great. It's a lot of fun, obviously, and emotional.
Yeah, so like a good example of how we incorporated that aspect to the show was like a month or two before the show, we were like, we want to write a sketch about two guys trying to process difficult emotions, but continually getting distracted by playing FIFA. So we just a sketch that like some of it's just sad, but then other parts of it are really funny and bizarre. How he goes through a list of different pets that he could get to make him feel less sad, like turtles or cats. And it's that really is a good sketch to capture like the exactly that, like playing into what we're feeling. And
it sounds almost therapeutic in a way.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's definitely therapeutic. And even now, you know what? Now I think we're going to add Lakeith Stanseal to the list of animals. Stan Seal. Thank you for coming. Stan Seal.
All right, we're done. And on a high note.
Okay, well.
Matt, are you hearing any noise off of, I think it's might be Elsa's mic? I felt like there was something. It sounded like something dropped in
the keyboard. There, yeah.
Yeah. I'm wondering if it's.
Yeah, that's it.
All right. Let me. How about
there?
Yes. Yeah.
That's better. Yeah.
Done.
That works for you. Okay. Thanks, man.
Excellent. All right. Well, this is a good point for me to sort of pivot. So, Richard Franklin Lennox Thomas Pryor was born December 1st, 1940, in Peoria, Illinois. Raised by his grandmother, he had a troubled childhood, enlisting in the U.S. Army at 18 before being discharged in 1960. In 1963, he began his comedy career performing in clubs in New York's Greenwich Village next to acts like Bob Dylan and Woody Allen. His early material was in the vein of Cosby, but quickly gave way to the bold material he later became known for in the 1970s after writing for a host of television programs and movies. This quickly became appearances in everything from Saturday Night Live and Lady Sings the Blues to the Muppet Movie. Pryor's resume eventually reflected 49 film roles, 17 writing credits, 5 producer credits and over 30 recordings, to say nothing of his Emmy, 5 Grammys, Writers Guild of America Award, and being the first recipient of the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor from the Kennedy Center. Live on the Sunset Strip was Richard's 21st recording, released in conjunction with his comedy film of the same name, but recorded almost an entire year earlier than the film, with the only portion used from the film's performance being one sketch. He went on to release 33 albums and singles in all, excluding compilations. Sadly, Richard passed in 2005 at 65 due to a heart attack after a prolonged battle with multiple sclerosis, but left a pretty indelible mark on the comedy world. So Elsa, you chose this album. So what about why this album? Why Live on the Sunset Strip?
I think this might have been the first full. So actually, I never heard the entire album, but I saw the special, right? And it was the first, I think it was the first comedy special I ever saw. So like, it's always had a huge impact on me, like a really.
What age would you have been?
I think I was like 8, maybe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, way too young, way too young. So, and I remember, I mean, like, you know, you listed all these facts about how he was raised, and my parents had similar upbringings, right? Mm-hmm. And I was always interested in I don't even know how to put this, like the dichotomy that comedians can hold of mm-hmm. living a life that, you know, is tough. I mean, just like you said, right? I mean, Richard, we're on first name basis. Me and DEP is the other name I call him. me and Richard Pryor. So in Peoria, right, he was raised in a brothel by his grandma, right? Like, battled multiple sclerosis, loved animals, like was an enormous proponent of like saving elephants and seals and elephant seals and everything in between. But like also, right, when he was on stage and delivering his life, right, it felt like anti-venom, you know, like I felt like I was going through whatever I was going through in my my delightful Black life. And and I felt, this is weird to say, but I always felt funny. Everyone around me didn't always feel like I was funny. And especially, I have 5 siblings. And so I remember when I heard this special, I remember holding on to the way that his transitions aren't necessarily smooth. You know what I mean? Like he's going from one part to the next as he feels it. But he's just there. He's just honest. He's saying things that no one would want to talk about in like real life, right? At least at the time. And that let me feel like my truth, my honesty, was not only something that could be funny, but something that could be shared, even if people didn't immediately understand it or weren't immediately ready for it.
Wow. When you compare this album to the special, how do you find it different? Like, I listen to the album and I find it is almost feels more personal in a lot of ways.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like it seems to be more. There's more. The structure seems much more clear than on the film.
Absolutely, yeah. Actually, that was the most surprising part to me, because I remember listening to the special and feeling like there was no line between thing one and thing two you just said. Didn't realize editing was a thing. So 8-year-old Elsa just thought, oh, people live in the TV. This is just one special with no editing in it. So now I understand that, you know, obviously there was chops, things in the middle. He probably does have better transitions than were displayed there. But I felt like the album had a lot more, not only was it a lot more personal, I felt like there were a lot more things that people like shouted back more frequently too, right? Like there was like real conversations happening at some point, real conversations, it's him saying, you know, eat my dick, right? Obviously. But still, right? It was, you know, it felt more natural, and still and different and still incredibly funny. So
yeah.
Thank you for giving me the chance to listen to the album.
Oh, my pleasure. And Isaac, yeah. What was your first exposure to, you know, Richard and this album?
So I think I had seen this special like years ago when I was in probably high school. Growing up, my dad loves comedy and would always say, we need to watch this special. Like, we need to watch, like name any comedian. He's like, we should watch it. And because I was a teenage boy, sometimes I'd say, no, Dad, like, I have my own. I'm not going to watch your comedy. But I remember watching, I think, bits and pieces of it, but never sitting down and really just focusing on it. Mm. And so I also really enjoyed doing that for the album. I listened to the album as well. Didn't watch your special most recently. And there were moments recalled, like, I kind of remember hearing that joke like years ago when I was younger.
Yeah.
And there were also times where I was like, this is not something I would have expected, listening to the album. Similar moments of, I think, vulnerability that I really appreciated in listening to the album. But yeah, to be totally honest, it had been a long time since I had really listened to or watched Richard Pryor.
Yeah. And Jason, how about you? What was your first exposure?
Well, I think my first exposure was probably watching Saturday Night Live and seeing some of his silly movies with Gene Wilder. We were in a house where we didn't watch R-rated movies, and a lot of stand-up was R-rated on the back of the VHS box, and so that stuff didn't really come into our house. Not that my parents were prudes, it was just that, I don't know, that seemed like a rule that needed to be kept, it needed to be respected. Yeah. And you know, we watched Back to the Future and stuff like that, and there were a few comedy albums lying around. Like, I listened to Cosby and Steve Martin a lot when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. But really didn't I've always known about Pryor. He's always sort of just been in the, you know, comedian's handbook of people you should know about, and I knew a lot about him, but I've never sat down and just focused on it. It's always sort of been in the periphery. I've heard a clip here and there on radio stations and stuff, but I think this is the first full album I listened to and the first special I watched. And I expected it to be much more raw, like, yeah, just sort of the legend of the man. And I thought it would be angrier, and I thought it would be more offensive and profane. And I found it delightful and kind of goofy in places. And like,
yeah,
it's really just cool, calm confidence about him without having to be pushy or showy about it. Or you know, he's just
right.
Just really knows what he's talking about, even though he's bearing his soul in this particular special. Yeah. He does it with such confidence and vulnerability. It was just so cool to watch. So yeah, I'm really glad we did this this time, because I feel like I had sort of known all I needed to know about Richard Pryor, and I was totally wrong. I didn't realize I had this blank spot of material, and it was, yeah, really great.
Yeah, like, what I found interesting about this album was it sort of comes at, you know, just after a very low point in his life, you know, mm-hmm. where he's, you know, getting clean after being, you know, really addicted and freebasing and like accidentally setting himself on fire and like, you know, going and finding himself. And it's like, it feels like this is actually like a catharsis for him, where, mm-hmm. where there's a lot of healing going on in this album, where, yeah, his earlier stuff was, it's sort of like, you know, he's still profane, but it's at times, but it's always served a purpose in his comedy.
Well, I remember you saying to me and Matt, there was stuff on this album that was problematic that wouldn't hold up today. And you said that before I listened or watched, and I couldn't find anything that I thought that about.
I think that the intent is always punching up. Like, I think the joke holds. Mm-hmm. I think the language doesn't necessarily, like how he talks about women, I don't think would necessarily work today, but I also don't think if he was doing this material today, he would talk about them that way. Right. like, because his intent is always definitely a punching up situation. Like, the butt of the joke, 9 times out of 10, where it's something that would probably be like, just my opinion, and I'd like to hear you guys' thoughts, it's himself. He's turning these jokes on himself, and right. And it sounds like, oh, he's saying something mean about his wife, or he's saying something mean about women or something like this, but it's not. It's
right.
he's poking fun at the man in that equation.
Right.
So like there's the bits, the very introductory bit about women, and it's really more about how men are fragile and women are strong.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So what are your guys' thoughts on that? Like the material, how do you feel it stands up, to time?
Yeah. First, I just want to jump in and say, hearing a lot more about this, I'm remembering that I had a similar household where rated R stuff really wasn't put on until I was much older, like until I was 16 or 17. And so I think part of the reason why some of these jokes sounded familiar was my dad was like, oh, this guy's really funny. You can't watch him, but here's one of his jokes.
That's awesome.
And so just wanted to jump in and say that. But I thought I had similar feelings where some of the times I was sitting, listening, and thought, I don't know how I feel about this. But none of the times did it feel like a cheap shot, a cheap joke.
Yeah.
Everything was kind of playing towards that line, right? Like, where is that line? Where can I find it? How can I, you know, play with that line? Which, no matter what time period you go to, if you find a comedian at any talent level trying to do that, it's not always going to age well.
No.
But what I think was the through line for this whole thing, which is why I really enjoyed listening to it, was that the entire set was him processing pain, which I think tends to be, in my opinion, the most powerful comedy. A lot of the pain with his addictions, with all of how he's been reflected in the news, with him burning himself, every single set was about pain. Like, yeah, I also found it difficult, the prison part of the set as well. I found that to be something that I don't think would play well if it were verbatim said today.
Sure.
But at the same time, I never at one point felt like, oh, he's just making like, for lack of a better term, a prison rape joke for no reason. Like, right. It was in that time, at least I felt, I don't know for sure, but my interpretation was, in that time, that was the style of bringing attention to something that's wrong with comedy. Mm-hmm. But again, I would similarly love to hear what everyone else thought, because as I was saying, listening to this, I was like, yeah, at times I didn't know how to feel, and at times I was like, this is incredible.
Sorry, I was trying not to talk too much. I'm going to keep talking.
No, please talk.
Please talk. You know what? Because I actually, because I remember having a sort of a sweeping feeling. That's not the word I want to use. Ephemeral sweeping feeling, similar to y'all's, right? Where, but I remember thinking, like, would this play for other people? Because for me, I was with it. Like, even that prison joke, right? The whole, I think there is, I got too much to say. I got so many words and only one mouth, right? It's getting me emotional. Okay. So I feel like you said, Matthew, right? Like, Richard Pryor spent his early years as a comic, you know, performing in front of, Bob Dylan and doing a lot of like gag humor, right? Here's a lighter and there, here's the flame and here's whatever. And then, I don't know how many of y'all know this, but like the day he decided to become the Richard Pryor we know, he had a set. I don't remember what theater it was at, but it was a big theater. And there's like Frank Sinatra on the front row. And, you know, like just a packed house, right? A dream for most comics. And he went up and he had the mic and he started to talk, like open his mouth, and then he went, fuck this. And he left. Like he didn't come back. Like he quit, right? And he came here to the Bay Area, to LA's sexy ass cousin. And he spent, I don't know how many years, but he was with the Black Panthers, right? He came to Oakland and like learned and fellowshipped and like dug into, to use your words, Isaac, that pain, right? Because what I've seen in all of those, like there's, again, I'm going to stop asking what words I can use. I'm just going to use them and let you bleep them.
Yeah.
But he has over and over again, since after that moment, he came back and like, he did those things that pushed that pushed the envelope that like no comedians were doing, anywhere, because they were like, no, there's no market for it. We can't talk about, especially Black and Brown comics, right? Like, no, we can't talk about La Raza. We can't talk about how we are going to jail. So fortunately, we can't talk about how all of the systems around us are looking at us as the criminal, right? So for Richard Pryor to come up, like you said, that is smooth and confident and make a joke like super nigger. That's not on the one we just heard on this album, but he has this joke where he's like, look up in the sky. Is that a crow? And he does his whole thing. It's a Black guy. It's a Black superhero, Black Superman, super nigga. And he, what does he do? He like leaps child support claims in a single bound and whatever, all this stuff that like is stereotypical, right? Like over, yeah. that like, I remember when I first heard it, whatever. I was like sneaking these things, but when I first heard it, I was living with like majority Latinos, right? And I didn't want to tell the joke to them because I didn't want them to say the joke back to me, because I was like, no, it won't work if you say it, right? I don't even know that I'm listening to it. However, there was one other Black kid at the school and I was like, you, come here. Right? And immediately he, like the same exact response I had, like it hit right in the center of him. So the reason I'm saying all this is that in this special, I had the same sort of feeling where like Richard Pryor is looking at us. And when I say us, I mean like entirety. Like he's like looking at everything he can see, mm-hmm. and just trying to make sense of it all, despite the glaring dichotomies. So when he's talking about women, right, and like poking fun at himself, he's like, look, here's the strongest guy in the room right now. You all paid money to see this man. This guy has had four wives because I keep cheating. Yeah. I keep hitting my wives. I keep fucking up. Look at me. We never talk about this, but here I am.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, you know when you get mad and you don't know what to do and the cops pull you over after you had a long day and you're just depressed? You got to go home and you beat your kids because you're trying to get that shit off somewhere. obviously not condoning beating your children.
No.
Right? But he's like, don't we all feel this? Now, when I say it in a sentence, don't you feel disgusting? Right? Like, maybe we should really look at what we're doing. I feel like I'm preaching. I don't mean to talk this much.
Oh, no.
My feeling is, though, just like that, all these jokes that that might not stand the test of time as far as Twitter goes, you know, as far as like quick response goes. Richard Pryor, Twitter headline, super nigger joke kills in Oakland.
Yeah.
That could work, right?
It's funny, like you say, some of the stuff wouldn't hold up today, but I also feel like in some ways he was way ahead of his time. Like,
yes,
so many people, most people who heard this when it came out would not have been ready for it.
Right.
He didn't live in what, you know, quote unquote progressive. We still have a long way to go. But today, I think there's a much broader audience for what he was saying.
Yeah.
Because people are like, yes, I'm with you. I'm ready to hear these criticisms about the world. Right.
Yeah.
But in 82, most of us weren't.
Right.
Yeah. And that's a gutsy thing to put on a stage like that.
And the thing I kind of find really intriguing, too, is like, in a sense, he kind of created the confessional style. Like, like his peers coming up in the 60s and 70s, there's a distance, but like he was one of those first voices to really personalize the comic voice that he was doing, where he is exposing himself on stage and his flaws and his vulnerabilities.
Not just this, though, like society's like talking about the Black experience like that, I think was a very brave thing to do in the time he was doing it.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and even to your earlier point, even like about it standing for what most people can handle then, Black audiences were ready, right? Like Black audiences.
Sure, yeah.
I'm so sick of only chuckling.
Right.
I'm so sick of being like, yeah, no, that's funny. I got to go back to my no money and government fees and hope I don't get pulled over on the way here and like dredging my son out of the river, right? Like there's all this stuff that like that was hitting fever pitch when Richard Pryor walked off the fucking stage in front of mafia members and Frank Sinatra and shit, you know? Like, I think what he said, gutsy, like that's him. And I'm trying to influence our serendipitous work.
There's one bit, the Mudbone bit is the only bit that was not recorded in the original album recording. Yeah. So that came out of a person calling for that character in the audience in the film. And I find it interesting because that's something he was leaving behind. So it's sort of like a goodbye to the sort of the character. That's a very old comedy kind of thing to do as well, like the character work and in that way. And I sort of found it interesting because it fits as an interesting pivot point between the two portions of the album. Like the first half sort of culminates in his recounting his trip to Africa, where he had a realization about the power of the language that he was using and the impact. It's at least at that in the album, it seemed to indicate a change in how he was using his comedy. And then, to the part where it's like, how did he get there? Where it's talking about his freebasing and his incident where he set himself on fire. So there's a very much an agenda or a structure I find to this, and it is interesting how he demarcates that on the album with that old character. Which is something that he didn't really do after that.
Yeah. It's also very nice of him to play into that request for so long. Something that wasn't planned. Most comedians wouldn't do that. You know?
Absolutely. Right. Someone's like, do that other joke you usually do.
Yeah.
15 minutes.
Yeah. And that it was so complete. Like, he just pulled that out of the top of his head.
Right.
Yeah. How do you find, like, what are your thoughts on like Mudbone compared to the rest of the album? Like, how do you feel it sort of stacks up against the rest?
I'm really trying not to talk so much.
No.
Actually, you know what? Honestly, I am curious to know, since y'all said you haven't, you weren't Pryor heads like me, Richard Pryor to this. So why don't you say what you thought first, and then I'm as the expert.
Well, for me, I personally thought it was interesting. I mean, I really am into comedy history, so I have dug into his earlier material, and I mean, my comedy inroads were Woody Allen and Bill Cosby. My dad had the Bill Cosby albums and stuff like that, and it felt like a Cosby bit kind of gone sideways. The character's like, oh, you know, this guy who lives on the street. It's like a kind of a Fat Albert-y kind of character. That very, you know, fleshed out character with this epic backstory.
And a bit more of an edge than anything Cosby would have done.
Yeah, but then, that edge, that sort of sideways twist that he put on it, where it's subverting the Cosby-ness of the situation into a much more grounded, a much more impactful message. Like, that's how my take on that character and that bit, and which is really interesting because it's subverting the norms while playing in them, which is
well, you're much kinder than me. I don't like the bit. it's just so different from everything else. I didn't see it coming. And to me, it felt sort of endearing. He clearly likes this character, and
that was something that really struck me, actually. All his different voices and characters, he does so well. He just slides right into them. And I love how he goes between being cool and goofy. Like, he's kind of a goofy guy. Not nearly as... I just was assuming he'd be so confrontational, and I didn't feel that at all. And I was so happy. I feel bad for being wrong about that. But yeah, this part to me slowed things down. It wasn't really joke heavy. I mean, because it was improv, it wasn't the... didn't have the same rhythm as everything else. And it just wasn't the kind of comedy I guess I expect or want from him. So, I mean, I get that it was a thing that he did, but the other stuff for me worked a lot better.
Yeah.
But I might not have got it too. I might just not get it at all.
Yeah, whatever. That's what matters, right? Like,
I mean, I would say for me, I enjoyed it. I'm kind of the opposite. I don't know very much about comedy history. I like know little to nothing about Richard Pryor or a lot of comedy. I oftentimes find myself in these conversations where it's like, have you heard of this? Or like, did you know this fact? And I'm oftentimes like, sure. Yeah. And so for me, what honestly happened is I was listening to this part of the album and I got like halfway through it. And I was like, hold up, go back. What? Like, where are we? Did I miss? Like, did I space out? Like, I had to like go and start this section over.
Right.
Because I wasn't familiar with this character or really. I mean, I knew this style existed, but I hadn't really listened to or watched a lot of character stand up of that form, where it's a character. It's just a character for a little bit, living and breathing that character. That being said, as I was listening to it, I was like, yeah, I for sure, because I don't have that knowledge, I'm sure I'm missing like chunks of this. Like, I'm sure I don't fully appreciate it, right?
Yeah,
because I don't know that much about it. But I still really enjoyed it for, honestly, a kind of for the audience reactions.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't get this, but this just shows me like more who Richard Pryor is because of how he was connecting with his audience in this bit.
Right.
And I hadn't even thought of the framework either, of how it really broke up. Yeah, it broke up the flow, which... In some ways, like he could have had a tighter story, right? By not having that, like this basically intermission between everything else that's really about him and his experiences in a much more literal way. But at the same time, by breaking it up, I think it slows it down and it really just like gives a little twist that is mostly for the people in that room right then. I think gives them the whole album just like it's like a little bit of a cherry on top, I guess.
Yeah.
And I feel like I think similar to you, Isaac, what the the biggest delight to me of that section is the audience and the way that, I mean all of it, right? Like the fact that they one asked for it. Two, he said yes. Three, throughout it, the whole time, they're like, ah, yeah. Okay, but what else?
Uh-huh. Yeah, he has them, eh? They're so into it.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And then what it brought to mind, similar to what you were saying, Matthew, is like the... it brought both the fact that like, it reminded me like, oh, Richard Pryor's old. Like, mm-hmm. That's a Mom's Mabley thing he's doing. Like, that is a very old move.
Yeah,
but that was his mentor. You know what I mean? Like that was somebody who was sharing the stage with him.
He talks about like his sister talks about how he was inspired by Chaplin and Jackie Gleason. You know, like sort of really old school comedians and characters and
You can see when he's doing these bits and like you see him sort of. Like lengthily drooping himself across the stage, right? Like,
my favorite is when he does the lion.
Oh my god! Yes,
his shoulders.
Yes,
man, just see a lion. He's so great.
Yeah, and that's I think the difference you brought up my mind, the difference I hear between the seeing the special and hearing the album was like, when I remember seeing the special and I you know, I couldn't divorce his voice from his body. So right. Sometimes I wouldn't see the character, but I could see like when he would make the movements. Right. And then hearing it, I'm imagining all the movements, but good Lord, when he spoke a different way, like when he became Mudbone, right. I was like, I see Mudbone, that he's here. Right.
Yeah.
And this is the last of my diatribe. But what I love about the Mudbone bit is that, I'm like you, Matthew, I'm a comedy nerd, right? I like to learn about everything. And what speaks to me is the way that, that Mudbone and, you know, all those sort of character based bits, they come to life in a time where, you aren't getting unique black characters from a black perspective, mm-hmm. right? You weren't going to see Mudbone on TV portrayed that way with like some love and affection and intelligence and being a wino.
Yeah.
Right.
You might see him, you know, like on the side of a fucking Superman movie yelling about his bad suit. you know what I mean? But like, that's not really the same spirit. Like a lot of people who are going to these concerts are going because they just want to see some, they want to be entertained. They want all of it. Like, I want your jokes. I'm going to talk about dick. I want you to say motherfucker too many times. I also want to have some cute, completely unfunny, personable moments, right? I want to see Mudbone. I want to feel like I'm visiting family, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you guys mentioned the physicality. That's the one thing I also found really awesome listening to the album and watching the special back to back at one point. It's like there's a care in there's a care in presentation in the album that you don't get a lot of the time, in that it's paced differently. Like a lot of comedians will just go, they have their special, especially now where a lot of the album is almost an afterthought. They just one set and any physical elements you just lose. Whereas it feels like he's taken the care to sort of pace it and structure it, tighten things up where it needs to be tightened because there's a visual gag that's not going to be there for the listener and given space to things, given room to breathe to other bits where it may work differently because you need to think it through. Did you guys, like, what do you think of the craftsmanship of this? Like the technique that he put in?
Yeah, superb. Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think that I don't even have much to add. I think, yeah, like you said, I think the pacing of the album, which again, I had never heard, and I was really impressed by the fullness of it. And I even felt, to your earlier point about things are a little racy, right? Mm-hmm. I felt like there were moments too when he'd say something that was like, for example, the bit about beating your kids, right? Like about, like, you know, like the man is after you. You had a long day at work. You got to have all those feelings. You might go home and beat your kids. And then he moved quickly into another joke. Mm-hmm. I felt like there was a perfect balance between, like, I want you to take time with this, and this will probably make you angry. I want to make sure I say it. I want to make sure you feel it and understand it. But also, you know, we're at the show. Like, I'm not here to fight you.
Yeah.
Right. To your point, Jason, right? Not trying to be like confrontational so much as make you aware of the confrontation inside of you. Right. Like,
I listened to the album first and really liked it and then watched the special. And it felt like, I was like, oh, this is weird that they took this take. But I didn't realize that so much was recorded new for the album. The special came out first, right?
The special came out simultaneously. The album was recorded a year before.
Oh.
But then they added to the album the part from the live special.
Yeah, so they dropped in the Mudbone bit from the special because that was done, that was of the moment. That was just a response to the audience calling out for that bit.
So they recorded the album, a year later did the special, and then very shortly after released the album with the new part from the special.
Yeah, they dropped them simultaneously. So they, when they were editing the film, they're like, oh, this wasn't in the special. And so dropped it in.
But yeah, I mean, same as you guys. I just noticed a total shift in pacing. It was it was interesting. It was tight and snappy, but it felt a little easier to process on the album. It felt like his language was slower, but there were fewer words. So it took sort of the same amount of time, but it was just clearer and easier to digest. And it felt like it flowed really expertly. It felt like in the stage show, he was having a little fun and being a little more looser with it. And I guess you can when you've got the visuals to help you out. But as far as an album, yeah, I thought it was, I'm glad it wasn't just directly translated. I'm glad it's its own thing because it works very well.
Yeah.
Now, Jason, you mentioned
some of the bits. Sorry, I just want to say, I guess because it's a year apart, some of the bits were the same, but
executed
different wording. Yeah, executed differently. Like not just like, you know, saying like I saw them and I saw them. Like it's not just that small a take difference. It was like he rewrote some stuff.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty cool. Yeah. Don't hear that difference a lot.
Yeah, and I prefer the album. A lot of those jokes I feel play better in the album than in the special, which is like, okay, well, is that more that I enjoy just the listening to it or what? And so it's something else to sort of dissect there.
Special, it seemed like he glossed over and didn't explain concepts as thoroughly on the album. Like I feel like he just, I've done this a million times. You know what I'm saying? Type of thing. Like, I don't know. It just felt. But yeah, it was much clearer in the album for sure.
And then there's some places he didn't go to, like in the end where in the album where he's kind of mocking the audience a little bit and how they, you know, oh, I've heard that joke about, you know, what's this for, you know, Richard Pryor running down the street.
It took me back in time. I remember hearing that when I was a kid and not getting it.
Yeah. Oh,
so weird to see him light that match and do that joke. And I was like, oh my God, like just flashback. It's so weird.
Yeah, so it's interesting to see he's in the moment but very aware in a, as a performer, which a lot of people just don't seem to take that care anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I just felt like now having watched the special, the album felt very grounded. And I'll say to what you were saying earlier, it made those parts that, as someone who is not as familiar with his work, as someone who's not as familiar with the I mean, obviously, I know the history generally around Richard Pryor, but not as intimately familiar with everything he is and represents. It made me say, even at those times where I was like, oh, I don't know about that, but I feel it though, right? Like he's taking the time to not just say the jokes, but also connect, which is why I really liked the album. It's really, having not seen the special, interesting to hear the difference that you all describe. That is probably a conversation for a different time of comedy communicated audio, just via audio versus also visually. But it is interesting that the video, it sounds like he made it to be tighter almost, which it still, I think, is a trend here where if you're going to watch, I mean, video comedy is getting tighter and tighter and shorter and shorter. That's really interesting to hear.
Alley-ooping off of that, because I think one thing that you just brought up and that Matthew mentioned before, all y'all mentioned actually, like, I think one thing that is lost now, because I mean, Richard Pryor was the forerunner, whatever. I'm going to stop using big words. You know, right? He was the guy before the rest of the guys, to do, this confessional style. Right. And so many comedians, I would argue the majority of comedians, stand-up comedians are trying to do that same thing. The biggest difference, and even with his peers who were developing their own version of that same style, didn't have the same level of nuanced care to everything that they were they're saying. Yeah. Right, like they're like, I want to make sure that this album does exist and is successful and isn't just like, I have the special recorded, you can listen to it anytime you want, but like, yo, go sit somewhere, right? Like, go be with your friends and not stare at me, like connect with each other and have me playing in the background, or, you know,
yeah,
let these jokes engage with you while you engage with the world, as opposed to no offense to the Kevin Harts and everybody, but like, as opposed to like, you have to sit and be here and stare at my face, right? Like, I want you to feel this, like Isaac saying, even if you don't know it, I want you to feel it and move on. Let it be a conversation starter. Let it be what it is. Yeah.
I have to wonder if that's, you know, because of his age growing up with radio comedy, if it's maybe right. The impact of that, that influence in his life that fed that.
Well, also the best way to sell audio at the time, or to sell comedy at the time, was through an album, right?
Like, right.
Before VHS became prevalent. I mean, if you wanted to sell something that wasn't the show,
right,
the live show, you had to do something. I mean, we talked about this a little on our Saturday Night Live episode. They put out an album of a compiled of the first and second season, and not all of it works because it's not written for the ear, right?
Right.
But they needed to be able to sell something that was popular and have something in their homes. And then, you know, it's the only album they did. They switched to VHS and DVD and all that stuff. But, right. You know, we sell them what they'll buy. And
weird one that I found in that trend, there are two All in the Family albums and one Jefferson album.
No.
You gotta hear that Jefferson's album, man.
When I dissect it, it's like, oh, that makes sense, because they are kind of sketches. It's just like, you know, George or Archie being George and Archie with whatever characters are orbiting them, and you can sort of slice those off into like individual, you know, bits where, you know, they're insulting Meathead or something kind of thing.
It never fails to amaze me. Like, I love doing the show about the albums and talking about the audio and how it's different from the live show and stuff, because it does amaze me how much great storytelling can be told just for the ear. Especially comedy. I mean, we definitely like to engage with the visual, and you know, some mediums use that very well, but you know, I think that you're a great comedian if you can do just audio and have it be amazing.
Right.
I mean, the different types of comedian. There are probably, you know, Carrot Top. A Carrot Top album would be ridiculous. I would love it.
Can see it. It's a real pumpkin.
Yeah. All just conceptual. You can do anything you want. I'm holding the moon.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. I really want a Carrot Top album so bad. I just want him to keep telling us all the bone has a bow tie now. Oh, but he threw up.
And then like Marcel opens for him. It's his chairs, some shoes shuffling. Oh man, terrible.
So Jason mentioned that he, you know, he drew inspiration from Chaplin and Jackie Gleason, who he worked on movies with. Now, who would you say he's like, looking at the comedy world now? Who would you say he's inspired? Like, what acts? In a way, I would almost contend that all of the more mainstream modern comedy is inspired by him. But is there anybody you feel is maybe like a torchbearer for that sort of fine balance that he's brought to the stage?
I saw a lot of Chris Rock in this, man, when I was watching it.
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. The two names that came to my mind were Chris Rock and actually Tiffany Haddish.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, because even after he got his MS diagnosis, his shows stopped being as obvious as fully attended.
Sure.
but his style, like, this is such a weird thing to say, but I remember I just went to my first in person comedy end up, whatever. And it was Tiffany Haddish, and it was special because she was actively not recording it, right? And it was after she had just had a terrible set like a month before. And so a part of her jokes were like, yeah, I had a really bad day. You guys ever had a bad day at work? Let's talk about it. And she went through how her last set was awful and why it bombed. And something really special happened that I wonder if this is like, there's an article about this somewhere. she decided, as a lot of comedians used to do a Q&A, right? Just like, let me talk to you, the audience, right? Mm. Somebody in the top row in the back, like cheap seats, right? Was like, get back to the motherfucking jokes. And she lost it. Like she she had the light to like turn on the house lights. We'll do Q&A. We're doing it for a while. And some of the Q&A jokes are questions are stupid. So she's giving answers that elucidate this person's stupidity. And then, yeah, that person says, get back to the motherfucking jokes. And she turned and like, I got goosebumps thinking about it. Like she turned and was like, cut the motherfucking lights. Turn the lights off, spotlights on her. She's still staring at this person in this jumpsuit. And she had even, she had like a red jumpsuit, right? So I'm feeling already the prior vibes. And she started like pacing back and forth and then started talking about what she wishes on this person. Like, just like, I hope you fucking your bitch back home. And then she's like, ooh, your toenail's too long and you can't stop thinking about it and you can never have sex again. I hope you get a hangnail from a kernel of popcorn and it's stuck in your nail and you're trying to get it out and you're trying to go to your job. You can't focus. And listen, you're flicking people off. You lose your job. But like, I still want you to be happy. So you find another job. It's not as good. Anyway.
That's awesome.
I remember seeing Richard Pryor have a similar sort of like, I love you, I hate you moment. Again, with his like, you know, courtship with the audience. Mm. And even Tiffany Haddish earlier in a different sort of interview, I think she had, she mentioned that she went to a camp where Richard Pryor, before his death, was training. Mm-hmm. So like she got to have a conversation with him and he like pounded her on her non-willingness to engage the audience and was like, and her like not being honest. He was like, you're making a joke and that's fine. But who are you? Why do I care? Like anybody can do a knock-knock joke.
Yeah.
Who the fuck are you, Tiff? And like you can see it. I feel like you can see it in her and Chris Rock's obviously like very powerful, very like, here's me, here's my experience, here's how it applies to the world in the most dire of circumstances.
Cool.
Yeah.
Isaac, do you have any thoughts on who he might have inspired?
Yeah, top that, Isaac.
I mean, I can't top that. What I feel is, I think it's already been said, is that there's no one you can't that's doing really good stand up now that can't not be inspired by him.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm trying to think of someone not just inspired, but like you said, a torchbearer.
Yeah.
I don't know, because not knowing as much about him, only hearing my dad repeat, you know, tell me some of his jokes and tell me that he's great. And then seeing bits and pieces throughout growing up and then listening to this whole album. The things that strike me that he did well was the vulnerability, which is two parts for me. It's processing pain, but also allowing that level of honesty to dig in to things that are hard to say about yourself and about others. But focusing always about yourself to try and connect with others. Then also the ability to do it with a level of professionalism and acting. Right. So I feel like that doesn't happen so much anymore, where you have a stand up who is character based, will do characters to the extent that he did, but also stand up that is, it's all rooted in storytelling and their own experiences. Mm-hmm. Like, just again, as you all were talking about who you think he, I was trying to think of someone who hits both sides of that, and I can't. I mean, last night, I had a friend in town who hadn't really seen anything of Pete Davidson.
Sure.
And so we watched a lot of Pete Davidson, and like I see aspects of that where oftentimes Pete Davidson says something that's very true to who he is to get a reaction out of the audience, because it's oftentimes a terrible thing to say. Mm-hmm. but he always does it with a smirk or a giggle. Like he's not, he's, and this is not bashing on him at all, but he's not committing to a character in the same way that
right.
Richard Pryor is. And I don't know because of how stand up and how we, how comedians both perform and on the avenues or venues ways they perform, but also how people receive comedy. You don't see as much of all parts of that, which I think is disappointing. But also part of it could be because Richard Pryor is really good at it, and it's hard. It's hard to do.
Yeah. You know, you brought to mind saying that Trevor Noah, actually,
Sort
of like, here's my experience and I'm inviting you into it.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
And I'd add maybe Wyatt Cenac to that as well. Yeah. Because he very much touches on those. He balances these big, vast political concepts with his personal experience that, like, we sort of see in the Africa bit in the album and the prison bit. These are themes that he considers, but he ties back into his personal experience really well. Yeah, I mean, it's like this. Richard is such a paragon of comedy. Like, it's hard to think of anybody. Like, in a way, everybody wants to be him.
Yeah,
just without the setting themselves on fire and freezing issues. But
it's still kind of a close one. Like, like Gerard Carmichael is like if Richard Pryor never did drugs in my mind. You know, like there's a lot of similarities in a lot of people that, like, it's just, you know, like, you're right, like, forbear, that was the word I was trying to think before. Forbear. But yeah, he just, this is incredible nexus. I mean, like, him getting the first Mark Twain Award is so obvious, you know what I mean?
I did not know that until this album, because I mean, I just thought it had been around longer, but then I'm like, that it came out when it did, and of all the people to get it, I'm like, well, of course, you know, it should be him.
For him, right? They were like, what do we need to, how do we let people know Richard Pryor is so fucking cool?
Yeah.
You know, he can't get a Nobel Peace Prize. That's not quite that. We're going to give him out for hope in a couple decades. So,
you know what? The other thing I'm thinking of is part of it is that I think there probably are actually people who aren't one for one the same, but are doing similar things, but it's not as much stand up. I'm just, again, limited knowledge of history, but the comedian I grew up with the most, not grew up with, because it was kind of high school and on, but was Donald Glover. And if you think of his stand-up special, he does similar things where it's very lots of characters, a bit less about his personal experiences. But kind of tries to balance all of the, a lot of different styles at once.
Yeah. And actually, there was the Coachella yesterday, and he was performing in his Childish Gambino persona, which is interesting because he did this actually really profound speech to the audience about living in the moment and how important it is to live, because, you know, tomorrow we may die, kind of thing. And it's like, it's, and that felt actually kind of Richard Pryor like in a way, in that it's almost like a preacher kind of moment, where he's like preaching to the choir and you know, it was really powerful. So I could definitely see that connection, like the two of them and what they're sort of, if not the execution, the inspiration of coming from a similar place, kind of thing. I think this is probably a safe bet, but would you guys recommend this album to comedy fans?
No, not to the comedy fans.
I would recommend, you know what, here's a deep cut. I would recommend that if comedy fans listen to this album and then dive into his show. He had a sketch show. Canceled almost instantaneously, but like, and that, Isaac, to your point, that actually, like, it's you can tell how old it is because of how drawn out some of those bits are, some of the sketches are. Like,
yeah.
There's one where him and Robin Williams are guns in the gun store. Having the longest conversation. Like, at the beginning, I was like, oh, shit. Yeah, they are going to kill everybody. And then 9 minutes later, I was like, okay, you guys.
honestly, got 10-minute sketches on that show. It's insane.
So they didn't... Why don't you edit that down and put it out again? Maybe.
Exactly. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But it's so good.
Yeah. Golden. And I said that's what they were considering him for SNL, like to be the host originally, because they still had him on contract from that show that they're like, no, we're not going to do this because like you're doing a 10-minute sketch about freaking guns talking to one another. Like, no. So they still had him under contract.
And I remember, I'm glad we're talking about this. I'm so excited. Nobody knows about the show, so I'm so excited to have a chance to speak to up with any sense of knowledge about it. Because I'm assuming y'all saw it too. Yeah. There's the last show, actually, like before they canceled him very unceremoniously and quickly. He's like talking to the camera really close. And then the more he talks, the more the camera backs up and he's got no shirt on. And then the camera keeps backing up and he's got nude tone underpants. My goodness, I screamed. That was all the bits in that show. That was my favorite one. Just because it was, I mean, it's similar to a stand up, right? He's like, I'm not trying to confront you, but I want you to have this conversation. I'm trying to show you something that you are confronted with daily, right? Mm-hmm. Especially because, I mean, I'll be honest, right? Like the whole time you're looking at like the idea of the this, I'm not trying to get too political, right? Like the black body is scary in media, right? Like a black man is this big monster, right? And here's Richard Pryor's skinny ass standing, and the dick, right? The black dick is everything. So show this like this powerful skinny black man with his grown ass mustache and Ken doll where his brilliant, like so good. Anyway,
I didn't know that he had a show. I will definitely be watching that.
It's on YouTube.
Sale on Amazon. It's expensive, but they did 2 volumes of a DVD.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Yeah.
Back to the question of will I recommend it? Yes. Like
yes.
Having been I am that person who was like, yeah, I know that Richard Pryor's good. I know that he's important. I will eventually listen to the full album. I will like eventually sit down and listen to it all the way through. Absolutely would recommend it. Wish I had done it sooner. Like I said, the whole time I was listening to it, I was just like, just listening to, and all my favorite stand-up is like this, listening to him process on stage and make jokes, but also sometimes just not make jokes and live with the audience is phenomenal.
Excellent. And Jason.
Yeah, I recommend it as well. It surprised me how relevant it still seems.
Mm-hmm.
And how that's kind of depressing in a way too. Like, you know, I think thinking about the when it came out, I can't imagine how powerful it must have felt to people watching it and hearing it then. I still find it quite powerful. All the same reasons you guys are saying. I mean, just his mix of cool confidence and vulnerability done in the most confident, gentle way. Talking about things that are important with gusto, but not hatred. He had a lot of passion, but always a cool head. And I find it amazing. I find he really has a great balance between sort of, I guess there were sort of 3 styles that came out of this era forward. There was like the surrealism of Robin Williams. There was and Steve Martin, and then there was observational stuff of Seinfeld. And I feel like it took a while for where we are now. There's lots of vulnerability. Audiences demand it,
right?
But at that point, he was mixing all these styles and creating some, I think, at the same time. I mean, Eddie Murphy owes so much to this guy. Everything in Delirious is I don't want to besmirch Eddie Murphy, but like he would be nothing without Pryor, right?
Yeah,
you know. Everything he did in that was so much of this, but just, you know, that swagger and the just taking time and looking around and knowing what you're talking about. None of that anxiety behind the stories that's popular now. I feel like a lot of people, when they're telling stories about themselves, like we demand that connection, the personal stories, but it's always behind this sort of faux geeky anxiety. Some of that's real. I mean, I know a lot of comedians experience all this, but I think it's also become a brand. And he has none of that. He's so self-assured, and I love hearing it. And it makes him very powerful and very, very funny. Yeah, I'd recommend it, not just to comedy fans. I think teenagers should listen to this. I mean, some of the stuff about what he was like growing up, just so relatable, especially to young boys. I mean, it's definitely a rated R thing, but I think 11-year-olds should be listening to this album.
Right? Knew exactly what his pointer was.
Yeah, definitely a better listen than Big Mouth on.
Well, a different time, right?
Excellent. All right. Well, what are you guys up to next? Are you going to be getting together again soon to do another sketch show, or what projects do you have coming up?
When is this going to air? There's certain, like, one thing we're going to be a part of we just can't talk about until they announce it.
Okay, so this will go up because we've got a few folks lined up. This will go out in June.
Oh, great.
Oh.
We will be
tell your secrets.
We'll be currently in Philly at that time when this airs.
You're going to the Philadelphia Sketch Comedy Festival.
Yes.
Ah, congratulations. Yes. Very exciting.
Yeah.
Find out details on the show times by now. So where is our website people should go to?
Yeah.
Probably Google Philadelphia Sketch Comedy Festival. Serendipity. Yeah. You'll find all the details.
Yeah, follow us on Facebook. We'll put it out on there for sure.
Yeah,
on Facebook. June 1st.
Excellent. Yep. And any other social media spots where they can follow and where folks can follow you?
That's a good question. You know what? Honestly, for Serendipity, we're not really that great at social media. We stumble upon promoting ourselves.
All right. If you want to see the Serendipity show, ask your friends. Hopefully they know when shows are.
Facebook. So many different things. Like Isaac is a part of 15 different sketch groups. So if you want to just go to New York and watch anything, Isaac will be on it or have written for it.
And same with San Francisco. I'll say we'll be on the stage or
on the
behind the scenes or nearby.
I'll be
in the show that's happening. We have a Facebook and a Twitter. Just look up Serendipity Comedy Duo.
Yes.
But we live on separate halves of the country, so not only are our shows serendipitous in what we perform, but also how it happens. So, just keep an eye out.
Yeah,
they're right behind you.
That's right. We're listening to Richard Pryor right behind you right now. I'm going to be in Montreal in 2 days.
Hey,
for the so I made a improv festival and. Cool. They're doing a Black and Funny Improv Festival night in Montreal alongside their Color Outside the Lines show. So I wish you guys were there.
Terrific. Enjoy the bagels while you're there. The bagels, smoked meat, and poutine. All the things you need to eat while
you're
there. Done. Bagel, not Fairmont Bagel.
Not Fairmont.
There's a huge rivalry in the city between Fairmont Bagels and St. Viateur. It shows what kind of person you are, which one you like.
Wow.
I hope you like the right one.
I'll just try to have a panic attack, and then I'll do a whole stand-up set about the bagel in that moment.
I love that.
Choosing the right bagel in Montreal. That'll really connect with my audience.
Excellent. All right. Well, thanks very much, guys. This has been Comedy Album Book Club, and like, subscribe, all of that. Give us a rating, and thanks for listening.